Never a dull day in the NBA. Kyrie's trying to recruit LeBron to Dallas. But first, the NBA Finals are going to be a series now in Miami. And the Raptors have narrowed down their coaching positions. And we talk about it all today on Hoop Talks. Welcome back, those of you who have a trained eye and those of you who have the untrained eye. I'm Nori Zeynep.
Nice.
Like that. Why I can concentrate today, Jelani?
Why?
Guess who's not here?
I don't know. Your boy?
Our boy.
Yeah, our boy, Justin Pooney, not here. And obviously, Karina.
She's
in New York.
She's covering the New York Liberty, checking out her girl, Sabrina Ionescu, in person, in the flesh. So we'll have her here on Wednesday to break us down with everything. But today, it's going to be myself, Nur Zeynep, my guy, Jelani Goodridge-Reed, and we'll be breaking down everything like we said. But first things first, the Miami Heat have now made it a series. So those who said it's going to be an easy one, Jelani.
I said five. They won one game, so thank you. They're following my script. We'll see what happens in Miami.
This is Jelani's script, nobody else's. Yeah. But the Heat saw contribution from all cylinders. We saw Jimmy Butler and Gabe Vincent give 21 points. Bam Adebayo had 21 as well. Gabe Vincent had a game-high 23. We saw five players in double digits with Duncan Robinson that ended up ultimately stealing the show in the second half. We saw him kind of light up in the third and the fourth. Yeah. He just kind of took over and hit every single shot, it seemed like, from the perimeter, right? On the other hand, the Nuggets, Nikola Jokic was really the only guy. 41 points. Everybody else didn't even reach 20. Jamal Murray had the second highest with 18. But what ended up being the narrative of the night, which I'm excited to discuss a little bit, because it seems like it's a very hot topic when I don't know if it should be. We'll talk about it. We'll get there. But first things first. Ramona Shelburne, I'm so sorry. She got lit a little bit by Eric Spoelstra last night after the game, where she asked him what it meant for him to make Jokic a scorer, not a facilitator. And this is how the actual everything went down.
Final question on the left.
Hey, Coach. Ramona Shelburne, ESPN. This is probably oversimplifying things, but sometimes when teams play against Jokic, you turn him into a scorer, you turn him into a passer, and he controls the game. He only had four assists tonight.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, you know. It's just, that's the untrained eye that says something like that. This guy's an incredible player. You know, twice in two seasons, he's been the best player on this planet. You can't just say...
Nuts. Crazy. That
the untrained
was
eye.
To call someone the untrained eye. That's the new casual. That's the new you don't know ball. It's a respectful way of saying the untrained eye. And it's funny because I think I saw a lot of the narrative, and we talked about it here too, where it was like, well, how do you stop the Denver Nuggets, and how do you stop the contribution of not just Jokic, but all the people around him? And we said, maybe you gotta just let Jokic get his, and try to limit the other guys there. But do you think that was harsh of Eric Spoelstra, or do you think he had a point in making that? I'm just gonna leave it to you.
The question was a fair question by Ramona. I think that, you know, Spo just he's not trying to give Denver any bulletin board material by saying, that was our strategy, blah blah blah. You don't want to give them that and give them some ammo moving forward, especially with Mike Malone and how he watches everything and sees everything and talks about it all the time. So you don't want to give him that. But, you know, on the contrary, yes, we did talk about it a bit and how you would rather have Jokic score, you know, like that. They are 0-3. The Nuggets are 0-3 when he's scored 40-plus these playoffs. Mm-hmm. So we've seen it before, over the last few weeks. But again, even if he had a triple-double, like, he's going to score regardless of what you do. Whether you want to give him double teams, or if you want to key in on the other shooters, he's going to score regardless, right? But I think the point here is that people aren't really understanding is that it was the shooters that didn't show up. It wasn't that he didn't try to be a playmaker in game two. It was more so the teammates of his did not score.
Yep.
We're talking about a guy that I've been discussing with you guys for a minute, MPJ. I think Michael Porter Jr., if he shoots the ball well, they are dangerous. Mm-hmm. He didn't show up, okay? KCP, he was absent at times, even on defense too. Let's talk about how he was giving up three-point plays left and right when in that third quarter. I just think that it was Denver Nuggets team that couldn't shoot. So it's not as much of Jokic not wanting to be a playmaker or wanting to set the table. Of course, when you do key in on other shooters, you're going to limit or find a way to reduce the playmaking. But I don't think it was all about that. I think it was more about the shooting that was just not there for the Nuggets.
Which makes a lot of sense, because if you look at it, as you said, Michael Porter and Caldwell Pope went 25% from the field together.
Yikes.
They barely made a mark in the game at all. They had four guys averaging 37% or less from the three. So as you said, their guys were just not hitting shots as they were in game one. We saw they were hitting everything, anything that got to them. But in game two, they weren't hitting anything. So in my eyes, they weren't hitting shots. But that also maybe allude to Ramona's point, where it was like, well, maybe you were defending those guys better than you were defending Jokic, because it then would mean, okay, well, obviously we know Jokic can score and he can always get his, but a basketball game is about everybody contributing. And if no one else is and you have only one guy go get his, maybe you have a chance of winning. So do you think that could have been their defensive plan there, to go out and limit the other guys?
You know, it might have been. We don't know what Spoelstra's plan was, but it might have been the plan. But I also look at Jamal Murray, too. I know he did manage to score here and there, but it wasn't an aggressive Jamal Murray that I saw in game two. I think in game three, we'll see a different look from him. But I did see times where Miami did a good job on him and reducing his scoring ability in game two. And that's why Jokic had to do it all by himself, 41, 11, and 4, right? Yeah. He had a crazy game. But I think as we go to game three, I want to see what's going to happen, because Mike Malone, he's not too happy, not too pleased by what they did in that game. And I think I saw it where they were missing shots, and once they missed shots, they just – they had a lack of presence on both ends of the floor. Yes. They were really, I think it got to their head, like the shooters on Denver. I think it got it to their head. And that's why it was really Jokic against everybody in game two.
I noticed that too. And I noticed that, you know, we saw in the first half that Jokic was still trying to pass and get his teammates going. Yeah. But when he realized that either no one's hitting their shots or they're being defended too much, he took it over and kind of had his way with the game offensively. But my other thing too was the defense of Denver was not there at all. You mentioned it, the second half when we saw Duncan Robinson go off, I think they left the three-point shot, the perimeter open the entire fourth quarter. He got the easiest looks. And if you give guys like Duncan Robinson, Gabe Vincent, Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, open looks the perimeter, odds are they will get those shots and they will drill them. So how do you think, or what do you think happened to Denver's defense this game compared to last game, where we saw Aaron Gordon and Michael Porter and Caldwell Pope come through and really have massive contributions on that defensive end?
Yeah, a lot of defensive breakdowns we saw on the perimeter. I was shocked, because usually Mike Malone's teams, they are ready to go. Even from the get-go, even from the start in the first quarter, they just weren't, they didn't seem to have it defensively on the outside. I don't know why. We saw a lot of sets where there was an open shooter often, right? That's how Max Strus had a nice start. He shot terribly in game one, right? He went, 0 for 9, I believe. And then first quarter of game two, 4 for 7 from downtown. Quick, instant offense from him. So they're going to have to wake up defensively, of course. I expect them to. They're not a fantastic defense to begin with, Denver, but they play as a unit. Yeah. And I didn't see them do that in game two. And I think that's also what I was talking about before, and how offensively it wasn't there for them. It got to their head. And then that's how we probably saw some defensive breakdowns. So I don't know, but you can't let these guys feel good about themselves on the road. That was their first home loss, right? Denver, they were undefeated at home because they managed to play well on both ends. Didn't see that. And once Strus was getting himself going, then you saw Gabe had a great game. And then I have to talk about Duncan Robinson. He was usually just looked at as a spot up shooter that didn't even want to dribble. You know, he's going off screen shooting, but we're seeing a different version of him. He's taking the ball inside. He's looking for contact. He's getting himself those and ones at times. He scored all his 10 in the fourth quarter. He came up massive because remember, Jimmy, he wasn't that aggressive. I didn't see that in the first three quarters, and that they kept them afloat. Those role players kept them afloat, and then Jimmy got himself going down the stretch.
Yeah, that was interesting. And the other thing for me too is And you got to wonder, I'm not sure how true this is, because I thought this is maybe how the game plan would stick out for Denver, where they're clear, they're, for me, where they were a better team. Yeah. And I thought everything had to go right for the Miami Heat for them to win. And in that same game, everything had to go wrong for the Denver Nuggets, which I think is what happened last night. But I think that might have been a true theory had this not been the Miami Heat, because if we've seen anything from them in the past in the playoffs, it's anytime it seems like they're just about to give up the series, just about to fall off, they not only come back, but they win it. So do you think this changes your perception of Denver in five moving forward?
Well, I'm going to stick with my pick.
Okay, Jelani. I'm going to stick with it.
I can't switch up now. Even though they're going back to Miami, might argue they have some momentum, or the majority of momentum now, getting that game, getting home court. But I think that Denver, if they play a good game, if they shoot the ball better than what they shot in game two, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough, right? I think it's down to the shooting. And I do want to see, though, how they deal with Bam. Bam Adebayo has been good. He's been really good. I've been on him at times. I've been hard on him because I know what he's capable of doing. But he's doing it offensively, okay? Right now, if you're looking at his numbers, 24, 11, and 5, 54% from the field, and he's been fantastic from the line.
Yep.
So he's doing that. And on the defense, he has to cover arguably the best player in the game. So right now, I wouldn't even say arguable. It's Jokic. But yeah, so I want to give him a quick shout out, but I still got to stick with my Denver pick.
I don't blame you. I will say, I think we've yet to see a Jimmy Butler aggressive game this series so far. So I'm sure
maybe
that's coming.
Three? I don't know.
It could be. It's in Miami, right? So it could be coming. But as you mentioned, Bam Adebayo. So NBA.com released their finals MVP ladder. I wanted to get your quick thoughts on before we move on to the Raptors stuff. But this is how they rank their guys, all right? I mean, Nikola Jokic, number one. Yeah. Okay, obviously. Yeah. Gabe Vincent, number two. Bam Adebayo, number three. Jimmy Butler, number four. And then Jamal Murray with number five. Are you in agreement with this? Or would you, like, shake it up a little bit?
I got to just put Bam above Gabe right now. Because I think without Bam, it would have been, like, a lot tougher for these guys to win game two. I know Gabe's been doing a great job, but Bam's doing it on both ends and doing a lot on both ends. So I have to put that there.
I agree. I think he's the impact of Bam every single way is a big thing. But let's talk about the Raptors now. Let's move to our hometown, the Toronto Raptors. Yes, this is the first team that fired their coach. And yes, it's the only team that still hasn't hired their coach yet. But it seems like we may have made some process and some progress with who we are looking at, with obviously Sergio Scariolo, one of the finalists, and then Jordy Fernandez, the assistant on the Sacramento Kings. After that, Darko Rajakovic. I'm hoping I said that right. But he's also the assistant at the Memphis Grizzlies. And also to your surprise and hopefully happiness, Kenny Atkinson at number four.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want to ask you, let's rank these coaches one more time, Jelani. Okay. Of all those four, I'm sure we're going to hear more names come up. I'm not sure what Masai's cooking, what he's thinking, but let's just pretend this really is the final list per Mark Markstein, who reported all this. So how would you, in importance of who would you want to see in Toronto, rank that for me?
I'm going to take Kenny down a bit because I just don't think it's going to happen anymore.
Yeah,
I think I'm going to go with the most likely options. Jordy, number one. I think if you're looking at what he's done, he's on Sacramento staff. They had a good year this year. But even before then, he was with the Cavs in the 2000s. He was with Mike Malone for a bunch of years in Denver. So, you're talking about player development there. You're talking about how not only the Cavs teams, but even Denver, Jokic, Murray, that player development, which the Raptors need badly. He is a guy that is, you know, quote unquote, a younger coach. So if they want to retool or go younger as a group, I think having that type of voice could work. Sometimes you might want to say have an older coach for a young team, but not always. Look at OKC, Mark Daigneault. He's done a good job over there with the Thunder, and he's a younger coach, Daigneault is. So I think having that type of coach here in Toronto could help with a younger group. So Jordy, number one, and he's a bright mind. He knows how to develop. Two, I say Sergio, just because he's been here before. He won a chip with us, and he's a really good international coach. Mm-hmm. Okay, he's won Euro Cup, Super Cup over there in Italy. He's done it in Spain. He's an Olympic medalist, all that sort of thing. So he knows ball. Okay, he does know ball, and I do think, though, if you bring him in, my only question is, does that indicate you're trying to run things back?
Right.
With what we saw with the 22-23 Raptors, I'd rather not run it back with, you know, that same group, but bringing Sergio in, you never know, Masai might want to be like, you know what, let's try it again.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Miami making the finals as a play-in team might make Bobby and Masai think, hey, let's try it again, because, you know, a play-in team's in the finals, maybe we could do the same thing too.
You can already see their press conference after he runs it back. He's like, well, look at Miami, they did it.
Yeah. So, and then Kenny, I'd say Kenny 3 and then Darko 4. But Darko, with him, they're saying that don't be surprised if he gets a job soon. Okay, and Memphis has done a good job over the last few years. He's been there helping that development of those young guys, and they've become one of the best teams in the West. So that's my list.
I like that. Well, I mean, I'm sure we're going to see the list grow and decrease or see what happens, but the Raptors still haven't figured out their coach. And we're, what, like a month out? No, a couple weeks out now from the NBA.
The draft is soon.
The draft, right?
It's in a couple weeks. So,
I got to wonder, I was thinking about this too. If you're getting a coach, a new coach come on, and you're looking to go on the draft and figure out the direction of your team, or even just to bring on a bench, is that not something you confide with your coach? Is that not something that the front office and the coach work together to
figure out the plan?
The play, exactly. Yeah. Like, what kind of player? Because the front office might have a certain look that they want, but the coach obviously knows what they want to work with. And we saw that Nick Nurse refused to work with what was given to him. So do you think they've either figured out who their coach is, so they're waiting to see, like, maybe, you know, in terms of Sergio, the season to end and then bring him over? Or are they really just have no idea and they're trying to take the reins for everything?
My fear is that they don't have an idea of what they're going to do. That's my fear. But the reports came out a long time ago that the Raptors wanted to get a guy before the draft.
Yeah.
So I still believe that's going to happen. I think it's going to happen soon, and I believe it's going to be between Fernandez or Sergio.
Yeah.
But I am kind of surprised it's taking this long. I'm not going to lie. But again, I do think they're just trying to figure out what to do. That's why I fear that they don't know what to do at this time. But once you get the coach, though, that's when things will start going in motion in terms of how the roster is going to look. Are you going to trade somebody? Are you not? Are you going to stand pat? Are you going to, you know, make a move? So we'll see. We'll see.
And I'm thinking, like, maybe they're waiting to see which direction they're supposed to go in, because I'm not sure if you saw this. This Masai Ujiri was on a podcast. And
you saw that
one? Let me put that up one for you. Can we see the Masai video, please? Number two.
They're expecting a lot of movement this offseason, particularly maybe on even draft night. What are you expecting once the finals are over and everybody's focused on, you know, what to do next with their team? What type of atmosphere are you expecting this offseason?
It's the NBA. You never know.
So, in other words, we're going to have to just look on Twitter and see all the rumors and all of that stuff, right?
Exactly. Don't put your phone down. Don't blink.
Oh, we can't take much away from snippets, but paired with what we know so far and this Masai little thing right here telling us to keep on our phones, keep Twitter ready to go. I mean, that's a murder being asked to happen.
I just hope something happens, and I know something's going to happen soon.
Do you think a quick question for you. Do you think he has a direction figured out? Like, which way he's leaning towards? Like, would he be running
it
back?
I do. I just don't think they want to leak anything. I don't think they want the public to know yet. But I know he and Masai and Bobby have been talking about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, as we know, Masai and Bobby will take their sweet time letting us know what's happening. But you know who will not wait to let us know what's happening? That is the West Coast players out there, the West Coast teams, in particular, Kyrie Irving and LeBron James. Because just, what, 5 minutes before we started recording, at about 11:55 p.m., Shams comes on and he says that actually, it's not that LeBron wants Kyrie, but now Kyrie's telling LeBron, hey, how about you come check out Dallas? Come check out the Mavericks. What do you make of that, Jelani?
I don't think LeBron's going to be a Maverick. I cannot see that happening. Imagine LeBron, Luka, and Kyrie.
Yeah.
It would be fun offensively. I don't know what's going to go down defensively. And how are you going to get LeBron? That's my question.
Yeah.
Right? And these false reports coming out saying that they were looking to get LeBron, like trade for him this previous season, but LeBron wasn't eligible for trade. So I don't know how that would have worked. I just think this is leverage played by LeBron's people, maybe Kyrie as well, to get something happening in Los Angeles rather than Dallas. I don't see him going to Dallas.
And what would, let's say, like, in terms of the other way around, because for me, what's most likely is that you end up getting Kyrie Irving to the Lakers instead. So if that's the case, what do you think? Because now Lakers have got themselves a nice little team, a little bit of depth there. Pelinka actually went out and did something good for the team in the trade deadline. So do you think some parts of that obviously would have to get traded? And which ones to get Kyrie there? And would that be a better team?
I don't even know. Like, it really depends on what the Lakers want to do. Do you want to gut your roster?
Yeah.
Because that's what's gonna happen if you want to bring Kyrie in. That's what's required. I don't think they should. The Lakers were in the conference finals. They were a step away from the NBA finals. You try to keep what you got right now. They found a good formula. They found a good bench around LeBron. They have guys, you know, shooters. They had AD play pretty well this season down the stretch. So I don't think they should shake things up, to be honest. I would love to see Kyrie and LeBron again reunited. I think the league needs that. But again, that just shows me you're trying to gut your roster.
Yeah.
So I don't think the Lakers should do that.
And you're right, because they did beat a bunch of really nice teams in this playoff run. Yeah. One being the defending champions and the Warriors, and the other, the Memphis Grizzlies.
Nice segue.
Thank you so much. You know who's not here and I can think properly? Justin Pooney. Well, because of the Memphis Grizzlies situation right now, and not knowing what's happening with Ja Morant, we actually had Adam Silver come out right before the NBA Finals and give us a little bit of an insight and a little bit of an update of what's going to be going down with Ja Morant. And it seemed like their decision has been made, but he will wait until after the NBA Finals to make any sort of anything public. And that tells me that it might be something severe coming, and he's expecting some level of backlash because he doesn't want it to take away from the NBA Finals, you know, the post and all the talks over there. Mm-hmm. So do you think that is the case? Why? Like, what do you make of all the waiting happening right now? Because as he said, he's made up his mind.
It's funny because he said he doesn't want to take away from the finals, but once he said that, everyone was talking about Ja Morant, which took away from finals game one. So that's kind of funny to me. But if you're looking at it here, Silver does say that it's not a legal or political matter. It's more about gun safety. Mm. That's what they're really looking at here. If you're asking me how many games, I would probably say over under at 25. Oof. 25, and I would probably take the over because they have new findings. I don't know. We don't know what they are.
Yeah.
But it sounds serious. It sounds like Adam's not happy at all, especially because they sat down. Ja was very apologetic. He wanted to change his ways, all that sort of thing. But it seems like it didn't work. Mm-hmm. That 8-game suspension or whatever, you know, had those little therapy sessions for 2 minutes. That didn't work. So I think it's going to be a harsher penalty. So probably something approaching 30 games,
ooh,
I'd say. I'm not going to go as far as to say the whole year. Yeah. I don't agree with that. I wouldn't go as far as to say half the season. No. Because remember now, let's face it. He didn't do anything illegal.
Yeah.
He didn't do anything illegal.
That's a curious state.
He was probably dumb, of course. It wasn't smart from him. And obviously having such a big following, you know, all these endorsement deals, brand deals. But it wasn't illegal what he did. It was just it's a matter of, you know, a repeat offense in terms of doing something time and time again. That's what Adam's really looking at here. So I'd probably say over under 25.
I think this will be something that he looks to make an example out of him. And not obviously that means to like kick him out of the league, but more so let's make sure that he doesn't do it again. Because if he comes back and he's lenient on it, it makes Adam Silver look not great, you know. Like it seems like he's kind of lost his league and his players. So, and we heard also that this is not just an Adam Silver thing. He's in talks with the player association, everybody around the league. So every part of the league is in on this and debating what to do with Ja Morant next. So we have so much up in the air with Ja Morant, with apparently Kyrie Irving wanted to have LeBron James in Dallas of all places. That's an interesting look for Kyrie, for LeBron.
Happening.
Imagine LeBron
that's
in Dallas. That's an interesting one. I don't like the visuals of that, but I think it might work. We'll see. The Raptors coaching, no idea. We'll see what happens next. But game three is going to be a certainty in Miami thanks to Duncan Robinson. And we'll be here to cover it all on Hoop Talks.